Today and tomorrow on the Country Hour, the spotlight is on prostate cancer. And that is because farmers and men in the country seem to have a higher rate of this cancer. The Prostate Cancer Foundation of Australia says a recent national study into the incident, mortality and survival rates of this cancer found that men living in rural and regional areas who were diagnosed with prostate cancer were 24% more likely to die within 5 years of being diagnosed compared to men in urban areas. Now, the prostate is a small gland that sits below the bladder and is only found in men. And the cancer is caused by the uncontrolled growth of cells in the prostate. So what is it about life in the country, about being a farmer, that could make this group more susceptible? One thing is for sure, men in rural and regional areas of Australia get less prostate-specific antigen or PSA blood test done. But there's also a controversial suggestion of a link between on-farm chemicals and prostate cancer. It is a suggestion or theory that has never been proven. Tom Shannon has over 20 years' experience as a high-volume prostate cancer surgeon and is the pioneer behind WA's first dedicated prostate clinic, which aims to be a centre of excellence in prostate cancer treatment. Tom Shannon, what do you make of this theory of a link between prostate cancer and farm chemicals?
So I think the question of, Roundup probably more than everything else, because it's such a ubiquitous herbicide, is that we've got to look at cancer in its whole context, and that's where it becomes quite complicated, because cancers form over long periods of time, whereas when we do safety tests on chemicals, we're doing them in usually in animal studies, short periods of time at high levels of toxicity. So research is much, much harder where you're thinking about low-level exposure over long periods of time. Now, there is some supportive evidence of a link between glycophosphates and cancer, but there's no direct linkage with prostate cancer. And part of the problem with prostate cancer is it's actually so common anyway. In Australia, the risk is 1 in 5 over a man's lifetime up to the age of 85. So it's a very, very common cancer. Being able to then prove some low-level exposure to another chemical over a long period of time becomes very difficult. What I can say is that there's a few things that muddy the waters for men in the country. One is that, yes, I think we do see more prostate cancer in farmers and in men in the country, but it might be explainable by exposure to chemicals, or it might be explained by the fact that men who are in the country tend not to get their tests done, and men in the country tend to find their cancers a bit later, so the cancers have a big impact. So when we look on a population basis at the impact of a cancer and what we can do about it, we've got two types of prevention. We've got primary prevention, which means you'd never get it in the first place, and we have secondary prevention, which means we diagnose it early to minimise the impacts of the disease. And we're probably failing on both of those counts in prostate cancer and failing worse for men in the country on both of those counts. So for all cancers, primary prevention is about the basic stuff we all need to do. Keep your weight under control, good diet, don't smoke, minimal alcohol and exercise every day. But the secondary prevention's the big one for prostate cancer, because we don't get any symptoms from prostate cancer. And with the testing that we've got, no man has to die of prostate cancer in Australia. So finding these cancers early and getting your testing done on a very regular basis, getting those test results followed up and getting your MRIs or your biopsies really will prevent all our farmers from going through these horrible journeys or more difficult journeys.
So what are the statistics showing you as far as that linkage between farming and prostate cancer. I mean, are you comfortable to say there is a clear occupational risk factor between farming and prostate cancer, or is that going too far?
Well, I think you should assume that there is an increased risk. I think it's the safest way to be with prostate cancer. But every man has a risk, and family history increases that risk very significantly. But if your baseline risk up to the age of 85 is already 1 in 5, then we're not talking about a rare cancer here. So if every man is not worried about prostate cancer, then there's something wrong. But men in the country in particular seem to have a higher rate. Part of that could be explained by some chemical exposure, and I think we need to be concerned about that. There's certainly some preliminary data out of the US, and I'm sure everybody's seen that there's been a big settlement in California with Monsanto, with some linkages with breast cancer. It's not a big stretch to suggest that there could be a linkage with prostate cancer, but it's not proven. But what we can say is that we know men in the country, in Australia, get less PSA blood tests, they get diagnosed later, they're less likely to have surgery, they're more likely to fail treatment, and they're more likely to end up on, you know, hormone-blocking drugs and chemotherapy than men in the city are. And a lot of that is completely preventable by just getting the test done.
Tom, I know you mentioned the statistics, the 1 in 5. Is that across Australia, or is that like a worldwide 1 in 5?
That's the Australian data, is a 1 in 5 risk. So that data comes from the Australian Institute of Health and Welfare. So it's a very, very significant cancer. And prostate cancer tends to get downplayed because another big measure that everybody looks at for cancers is 5-year survival. And 5-year survival for prostate cancer is very good because it's not a cancer that tends to kill you quickly. Even if it's spread to the bones, we can keep things going with chemo and hormone blocking drugs for a while. But the big impact for prostate cancer is on quality of life and then length of life beyond about 10 years. So the big issue with prostate cancer now is that most of our patients are going to live till their late 80s or 90. You know, a 65-year-old in Australia has a life expectancy of 20 years. If you make it to 75, you've got at least another 15 years. And so because we're getting older, and a lot of our farmers, they're really quite fit, healthy people, they've got a long life expectancy ahead of them. Prostate cancer is a very, very significant illness for them. So I would want our country patients and our farmers to be more alert about prostate cancer than about others. And the other thing that our farmers are great at doing is that they're great at worrying about everybody else and everything else, and not great about worrying about themselves. And so that's a perfect trap for this cancer, because it's not going to tap you on the shoulder. You've got to go looking for it.
Tom Shannon, great to have you on the Country Hour. Thank you so much.
Thank you.
That is Perth-based urologist Tom Shannon, who works at Hollywood Hospital and has specialised in prostate cancer and prostate diseases for more than 20 years. It is very common, as was mentioned. The Cancer Council says it's the most common cancer affecting men in Western Australia. And in 2017, here in WA, 2,093 men were diagnosed with prostate cancer. And in the same year, 269 men died from it. Tom Shannon was talking about the PSA test. And I did mention earlier, it means the prostate-specific antigen blood test. It's a protein produced by normal as well as malignant cells of the prostate gland. And the PSA test measures the level of PSA in a man's blood. So for this test, a blood sample is sent to a laboratory for analysis and you get those results. That's the test that Tom Shannon urges you to get. 12:30 here on the Country Hour, just after the news headlines and across to the Bureau of Meteorology, continuing this conversation, you're going to meet a farmer from Northampton who was diagnosed with prostate cancer. This is going back 3.5 years ago, and he's going to talk you through his experience, his journey with that. First, though, news headlines. Ellie Colvin is here.
Thanks, Belinda. A new locally acquired...
You're part of the Country Hour with Belinda Varaschetti on ABC Local Radio WA.
So glad you could be here this afternoon. And if you were tuned in from right at the top of the hour, you will know that today and tomorrow on the Country Hour, turning the spotlight on prostate cancer. And that is because farmers and men in the country seem to have a higher rate of this particular cancer. Earlier in the hour, you heard from Tom Shannon. He's got over 20 years' experience as a high-volume prostate cancer surgeon. And he was saying, you know, one thing's certain, that men in rural and regional areas of this country get less prostate-specific antigen or the PSA blood test done that can tell whether or not you have this particular cancer. It can help you in your life. It can actually stop you dying from prostate cancer. You heard from Tom Shannon earlier, and today, now, I want to introduce you to Dennis and Alison Box, who farm at Northampton, about a 40-minute drive north of Geraldton. Dennis turns 68 this year. 3.5 years ago, he found out that he had prostate cancer. He opted for a complete prostate removal.
It was all contained in the prostate when they took it out, and that was it. No symptoms at all, hardly, nothing at all. Just on the PSA test, that's all they were watching was that thing, monitoring that thing. Had no symptoms before that, like getting up, going to the toilet at night time and all that sort of stuff. Just didn't happen.
You know,
should be.
They always encourage women to do a women's health check, and for all you men out there, it's just as important for you.
One of the things that I hear around the concern around having surgery and having a prostate removed is incontinence. What's been the experience for you?
Yeah, I didn't have a lot of trouble as far as that went. End up buying a couple of packs of pads to wear to get ready for it, but I only used half a packet of the light pads as it was. And then after that, it's all about going back to the physio, doing more pelvic floor exercises to get more control back in your bladder, because you've got to control that bladder. Like, I've had no trouble since. No trouble at all.
How has it changed your relationship?
Oh, no. Not a lot. Not a lot in relationship as far as whatever it goes. It's still much the same.
Yeah, because that is the other big concern, isn't it? I'm never going to be able to have sex again.
Yeah, well, that's why you go and see the sexologist, Melissa down there in Perth, and then she comes up to Geraldton every 2 or 3 months or whatever. You go and see her, and like if Alison's got any problems, she does male and female, doesn't matter who. If you got any problems, you go and see her and she'll sort it out for you. Simple as that. We just use the injection these days and have no trouble at all. Don't think because you lose your prostate, that's the end of everything. But if you go and see someone and sort it out, then as long as you're not blind about it, like some blokes that I've spoke to about, they don't want to know about it. Well, that's up to them. If they don't want to know about it, well, that's their problem at the end of the day. But if they want to go and help themselves, go and find out information and go and do it.
You go through everything together.
You've got to
together,
go through everything so. Together, so why not go and do these other things if you've got to go and see someone about something? You go together as a couple, not as an individual. Because the other wife, if she doesn't turn up and she doesn't ask questions and anything else, then she's not going to know either. It's all up to him all the time.
And what about work on the farm? You touched on it earlier.
You know, I can still do everything the same, yeah. Well, because I'm getting old, I'm slowing down a little bit, but apart from that, there's only me and my brother and my nephew that's here, and that's it, and we still run the property still the same. But yeah, I can still do a day's work still the same. Once I get my knees fixed and my hips done and everything else, I'm right.
A few more bits
worn out, bits broken down. Yeah, broken down bits. Yeah.
I wonder too if you had looked into or had thoughts about the prevalence of prostate cancer in rural and regional communities in comparison to, say, those living in the metro area. Do you reckon it's more prevalent, or do you think we just hear about it more?
There does seem to be a lot of prevalence in rural communities, so it would be interesting to be able to compare any statistics compared to rural and city areas. I don't know if there's ever been that comparison.
Per 100 or per 1,000, like men, what's the difference in the country than out in the city stuff down there, that's all. Oh, I know plenty of them around Northampton have had it now, and treatment and all sorts of things around in Northampton just alone. I could count at least 10 people plus more probably, I don't know, that's just in Northampton itself, in the district of Northampton. And then I was talking to another fellow down in Morrawar, and there was 13 men in Morrawar down there that had their prostate trouble down there, cancer and stuff, in a little town like Morrawar. So you really can't put a finger on it why it happens, but it does. I drive the boom spray on the farm up there. I do all the spraying up there on the farm. I've done for since boom sprays come out on the farm, and before that with the old misters and stuff like that. So you're open to all that, like the old esters and amines we used to use back in those days with an old mister and all open cabs and stuff. So, you know, all these chemicals, do they build up in your body enough to come out one day down the track? It mightn't happen straight away, but in 40 years' time, it might break out and end up with a cancer like that or something. You really don't know, you know, what causes it. But back in those days, back in the 70s and that, you didn't worry about things like that. You just went out and sprayed your crops and handled the stuff. You didn't put gloves on and all that PPE stuff. You didn't use that stuff them days.
Yeah.
Didn't worry about it, especially when you had old bloody DDT and all that sort of stuff, spraying grubs on lupins and things. You just got out with a mister and went and done it.
The only good thing now with all the boom sprays, if they've got all the equipment to filter your air, which is, you know,
a lot cleaner.
Yeah, it's a lot cleaner.
The environment's a lot cleaner now with your machine. All your modern machinery's a lot cleaner air that you breathe while you're in a boom spray or something through your carbon filters and stuff in them. So a lot better than just your mixing process, that's all, these days. And the rest out in the paddocks is pretty safe these days compared to what it used to be.
So it doesn't sound like you think that, yes, that's definitely the cause. You just think maybe.
Maybe, maybe not, yeah. Or a combination of factors could be as well.
Dennis and Alison Box, who farm at Northampton, about 460 kilometres north of Perth, and they were talking to Joe Prendergast. Tomorrow on the Country Hour, you'll get to hear some advice from the sexologist that Dennis mentioned. Her name is Melissa Hadley-Barrett. She's also a prostate cancer communicator. She comes highly recommended by Tony Seabrook, who, as you know, is president of the Pastoralists and Graziers Association here in WA. You will also hear Tony Seabrook's personal story on tomorrow's program. He knows a lot of farmers in his area that have prostate cancer or have died from the disease. So that is tomorrow on the Country Hour. A few texts coming through too on the subject. This one sounds like another little dig at glyphosate to me, Belinda. Thanks for ruining my day after being so happy about the rain. Don't you think this could actually be a story about poor rural health facilities and cultural male attitude to health checkups instead of glyphosate beating? Well, that's exactly what Tom Shannon, the surgeon, was saying earlier. It is definitely a lot about that male attitude to health checkups and the fact that those numbers of men in rural and regional areas just do not go. Those numbers are way down when you come to looking at the amount of men getting that PSA test, which is the all-important indicator of prostate cancer. This too from Greg. Run some more stats. Is the prostate rate higher in grain growers than other farmers? Could it be related to hours on a machinery seat? Check rate in long-haul truckies. Generally and surprisingly, association does not equal causation. But maybe. What about all the bad chemicals? Says Greg. And this from Les in Mora. Talking about cancer in the bush, how many of us beyond 80 years went without shirts in a hot summer, imbibed more than freely, are a bit portly, sprayed without PPE, and now wonder why we have to contend with the fruits of that lifestyle, says Les in Mora. The conversation will continue tomorrow here on the Country Hour, so I do hope you can be part of that conversation tomorrow. Let's get to the markets now, and it's the Katanning Sheep Market. Today really is a continuation of the Country Hour's special feature that started yesterday, continues today, all on prostate cancer. Richard Hudson is the executive producer of the Country Hour. And Richard, I suppose you could say that this topic really was forced its way onto the program.
Yeah, it did. It's the most common cancer affecting men in Western Australia, and it seems to be particularly prevalent in rural Australia. And for those who have it in the country, it seems to be more severe. We'll go through some of those reasons shortly. But as urologist Tom Shannon mentioned yesterday, there's growing concern exposure to chemicals commonly used on farms could possibly increase the risk of developing prostate cancer. So I'll re-emphasise the words could and possibly. There doesn't seem to be any hard evidence at the moment, and he did go to great lengths to explain that he felt as though there are other contributing factors as to why it's posing a bigger problem in rural parts of Australia as opposed to the metro regions.
But it was Tony Seabrook who was really the person who bashed on the door to get this particular topic on prostate cancer onto the Country Hour.
He did. He bashed it pretty hard too, didn't he? He farms at York, and a lot of people would have heard him on the Country Hour because he's president of the Pastoralists and Graziers Association. And he's not afraid to have his say on lots of topics, but he has had prostate cancer. He's been dealing with it and also the consequences of the treatment. So in a moment, you'll hear from someone who he calls one of his angels. Her name is Melissa Hadley-Barrett, who's a nurse practitioner and a sexologist and a prostate cancer counsellor. But when he first came and chatted to us about it, I actually thought, yeah, this is probably a topic that's more suitable for a program like Regional Drive. But Tony was the one who insisted on having it on the WA Country Hour. He wanted the farmers, farm families, farm workers, basically to stop and think about prostate cancer.
Richard, there are a lot of people I know that have been through the process. They've dealt with prostate cancer, but there's a lot of young farmers out there that think they're absolutely invincible. They think it won't happen to them. And these are the children of the baby boomers, and I'm one of the baby boomers. They need to be aware of the risk of this particular disease to their own health and well-being.
And it's touched you, hasn't it?
Oh, yes. I was diagnosed. I was 10 years before I actually had to do anything. York alone. And I know all these people. I know them well. Some of them are my best friends. There are four of us that have been together for 70 years, and there's only one that hasn't had the cancer. The other three have. So it's out and about. And I've got 22 farmers around York. They're almost all farmers. I've got another eight close by. I've got five members of the PGA that are out and about the whole state. And of the crowd I've got over and above those, the five of them are dead. So this is a serious issue that we need to be cognizant of.
Melissa Hadley-Barrett, you're a nurse practitioner and a sexologist, but I suppose I'm probably more familiar with your work being a prostate cancer communicator, if you like. Mm-hmm. Those are pretty startling figures. Do you feel as though there could be a correlation between farming and farming practices and what farmers use and prostate cancer?
Look, there is some research that says there's a link, but they don't know why, that people in rural communities and farming communities seem to have like more prevalence of cancers in general. So yes, perhaps. What I see in my practice is not so much that it's more prevalent, but by the time we get to see patients who are from rural areas, it's often much more advanced, which I think is because of the lack of services and the lack of access.
And people may be taking a little while to actually seek help.
Yeah, I think there's a bit of that, you know, I'll be all right, everything's okay, I just work harder and everything will go away. And I think also prostate cancer is silent. And so unless there's, you know, most the average Australian guy doesn't go to the doctor, particularly in rural areas, unless they've got a problem and you don't know about prostate cancer. And, you know, once you get symptoms of prostate cancer, it's heavily advanced. So I just think that we see people in rural areas at a much more advanced stage.
When people are concerned or when they are given some news, they often now turn to that thing, the computer.
Yes.
And if you do a little online search for can pesticides cause prostate cancer, the answer's pretty scary because it's short these days. It gives you the abbreviated version. And the answer that I got when I looked it up today is, yes, there's a twofold increased risk of prostate cancer amongst those who are farming compared to those who are unexposed to pesticides and chemicals. Is that proven?
Not that I know of. And like, I just did a Google search on Google Scholar, and I've also done a PubMed search before, and there certainly seems to be a link, but there's no proof. So, yeah, I can't tell you whether or not that's proven or not. But I do anecdotally as well. I used to work in an emergency department in Geraldton many years ago, and they had lots of Vietnamese, like, tomato growers there. And we had an extensive number of people coming in with miscarriages. And that, you know, we always associated that with the chemicals.
Tony, I'm sure you did some online searching when you first found out you had prostate cancer. Do you feel as though there could be a link with the sort of chemicals you've been using?
Look, it's a big step to actually do that. I've asked a number of doctors involved in this field to do some work with me to see, and they've been very reluctant to actually want to do that. Mm. I think they're making so much money dealing with the prostate cancers that they're operating on that they don't want to dedicate the time to put into that. But when I look at the list of people that I've got there, and it represents a very large portion of the York farming community, I'm just really concerned that there might be more to it than just to say it's a normal scatter. You don't find that level of prostate in my city mates, the ones that live in the city. It seems to be particularly a rural issue.
Is that true, Melissa? Because I chatted to some other farmers, and their theory was someone like Tony knows about that because it's a closer community and people talk, particularly if you talk as much as Tony does. But, you know, it was challenged to me. You know, I probably don't know the people in my neighbourhood who have prostate cancer because I don't actually know them.
Yeah, I think that's true. I think you get to know your community much better in the country. So I think that it's probably a skewed view. But, you know, as you get older, every 10 years of age, your risk of getting prostate cancer increases. And there's over 20,000 people a year diagnosed in Australia with prostate cancer. It's just a very, very prevalent cancer. And so, look, I honestly couldn't tell you whether or not it's more common in country areas or not. I certainly see more country patients than I do city patients. But I think, you know, I do country clinics, and I have been living in the country myself until last 5 years for my whole life. So I think, you know, it's, I see that as well, but I don't know whether or not that's, I have a skewed view.
All right, let's get into some details. And this will move at a fairly rapid pace because I've got a million questions. But Tony, that first bit of the diagnosis, how were you diagnosed?
A very, very astute and conscientious family doctor. My PSA score was low, very low. He just said, look, Tony, you should have this checked out. And that involved a biopsy. I didn't for any, even 1 second, think that it was going to come back as a positive. And it absolutely floored me when it did come back as a positive. Now, that was 10 years before I actually did anything about it. I maintained a low PSA, and I watched that with great care. But I was absolutely floored because it's that old thing, it's not going to happen to me. And when it did, then all of a sudden you're confronted with, what am I going to do? And we can go there later if you like, but there's a whole lot of options that people need to explore with the diagnosis. It's not a simple thing of off to the surgeon tomorrow. It gets more complex.
Again, just a little explainer, if you look up what a PSA is, it's an acronym for, ironically, public service announcement, because it's not normally what people tend to do when they get prostate cancer. But if you keep looking a little bit further, PSA also stands for prostate-specific antigen test. And in layman's terms, what it means is if that figure's a little bit high, then it's a suggestion that you could possibly have prostate cancer. Is that accurate?
Yeah, that is accurate. I think the problem with prostate, the PSA test, is that it can be affected by other things. So, for instance, if you've ejaculated in the last 24 hours or if you've ridden a bike in the last 24 hours. So I think there's a big mistake of just having one PSA test. So the trick is to have regular yearly PSA tests, because it's actually the incremental change. Like Tony said, his GP was very clever in picking up. You know, if you just go in and have one test and it's low, that is great, but it doesn't mean much without the next year one and the next year one, because it's a tiny incremental change that makes an issue different.
But that delay Tony mentioned, I would imagine that is quite common, particularly amongst people in rural areas. Everyone in this modern day and age is busy. Every hour, every minute is really busy, whether it's women, kids, men or whatever. But there's always an excuse, isn't there, for I'm too busy because it's seeding, or I've got to get the truck on, or whatever. How important is that timing, that if you do have the delay, particularly with prostate cancer, if you're putting it off, if you're procrastinating, is that crucial?
Yeah, it's very crucial because there's a big difference between diagnosing prostate cancer early and diagnosing it late. You know, if a prostate cancer is confined to the capsule of the prostate, then there's a 96 to 98% cure rate. Whereas once it goes outside, that rate of cure goes down. And so, and it's not only just about your cure rate, it's also about your quality of life. So I know from the patients that I see, and it's research has proven this, that the earlier, if people are treated when it's inside the prostate, then their quality of life is going to be better down the track because it's not affecting all the other tissues and they're more likely to get their continence back and get their erections back. Whereas if it goes outside, then, you know, your quality of life is worse. You end up on other therapies that make you feel tired and depressed and all sorts of things. So I think it's crucial that you have it every year. And I also think that a problem is a lot of men will choose not to have the PSA when they have their yearly bloods because they don't want to know the answer, because they think that they're going to end up with erectile dysfunction and incontinence and that there's no solution for those problems. So they'd rather not know. And I think educating men that there is possibly a solution to these things and they can do things to help will encourage them to then go and get their PSA checked and get early diagnosis.
One interesting thing is I think some people would get their bearings from a dealing they've had with prostate cancer through someone else, through maybe their a parent, a grandparent, a neighbour, and time flies. They might think it was only yesterday, but if it was, say, 10 or 15 years ago and that's where they've developed their paradigm, how much have things progressed in the last decade?
So I've only been dealing with prostate cancer patients for 5 years, and when I first started doing this, most of the patients I saw never got their erections back. The patients I've seen in the last 18 months, 2 years, often get their erections back. And so, you know, when I see guys for the first time, they'll say, oh, my dad had his out 20 years ago and this and this and this has happened. And I'll be like, well, it's totally different. Mm-hmm. It's not the same 5 years ago to now. I mean, I jokingly say to some of the surgeons that I work with, you know, if you keep getting so good at this, I won't have a job anymore. Mm-hmm. You know, so like it changes all the time. And so I think it's really important not to base these things on history. Medicine is always getting better.
So, Richard, I've got a very close mate, and I've been bullying. I've had to bully him every time to get a PSA test done. Same doctor, and he had it done about, it's 2 years ago now, and the doctor said, I'm a bit concerned about this. We better do another one in a couple of months. Now, your PSA can creep up very slowly, and it can actually sit at a fairly high level, of 4 or 5, for a long time. But what actually happened was his was going through the roof, and the doctor said, mate, you're in hospital next week. It was as quick as that. It was on the way. And unfortunately, it was too long. And he's continent, but that's all. And it was just because, you know, it was moving quickly and he waited too long.
On the Country Hour, you're just hearing from Tony Seabrook, who's head of the PGA and a farmer from York, and also Melissa Headley-Barrett, who's a nurse practitioner and a sexologist. Can I just read out some comments from a few farmers that I've chatted to who have had prostate cancer and they didn't want to come on tape.
Oh.
Didn't want their names to be mentioned either. But you talked about how you deal with the fallout, and this is some of the fallout that they have told me about. These are some quotes. It changed my life. So the prostate treatment, it changed my life. I was told certain things. I was assured of certain things. They didn't turn out as well as they said they might have done. I don't talk to anyone about where I'm at. I just have to put up with this. I know what's in front of me, and that's it. And I also had one guy, he opened up to me and then he said, you're the first male I've actually told any of this to.
Oh, so sad.
And the sort of fallout we're talking about, if we're going to just name it as it is, we're talking about nappies and loss of sex life.
Mm-hmm.
And it can affect, you know, your body in all sorts of different ways. Dealing with the fallout must be hard.
Yeah, I mean, men with diagnosed with prostate cancer have a 72% higher risk of suicide. So when you're talking about rural communities that already have an increased risk of suicide, that's a big problem. I don't think it's just about loss of sex life either. It's actually about loss of masculinity. So, you know, I've had men get their first erection after 5 years who, like one guy in particular, he like cried and said, oh, I feel like I'm saying hello to an old friend, you know. Like I think there's a lot more to this, and I think it's hard for people to understand if a part of your body doesn't work anymore. That's a big thing. You know, if you're not getting erections, your penis isn't getting any exercise, and so then you can't go stand up to the toilet. You have to sit down because your penis Christmas drinks. So there's all these other things. You imagine going to watch the footy, you drive from your country town to watch the Eagles play, and you've got to miss a whole quarter because you're lining up for one toilet to sit down because you can't stand up at the urinal and pee anymore.
It's not such a shame if it was the Eagles. Face it.
Okay, the Dockers, whoever it is. But, you know, those kind of things really affect your life, I think. And I also think from a sexual point of view, sex isn't all about erections. So just having someone to talk to who can say there's a heap of other ways to have intimacy with your partner and have it, you know, women don't actually care that much about erections, to be honest. And so, you know, I think that relationships break down when the male partner doesn't want to cuddle their wife anymore because they feel like it's false advertising. So it's just about opening up the conversation and talking about these things. And I think men go into themselves and really withdraw when they feel sad and depressed about this. It's a much bigger deal. And I don't think it's considered so much the effect it has on people's mental health. And, like, I love my job because I feel like I make such a big difference to guys like that. When I hear those stories, I feel like that's just so sad because we could help that. He doesn't just have to, you know, his incontinence, he could have surgery to correct that. His erections he could fix, you know, or he could do treatments that would help. We really need to get this story out there. It's so important to get this story out there so people get help.
Tony, as a farmer, what was your reaction hearing those genuine comments? They're real.
Richard, I'm not doing this for fun. Now, this is not an easy thing to do. It's an important thing to do. And if nothing more, well, the two things I'd like to see come out of what we're doing right now is an awareness amongst younger people that this is an issue and they need to deal with it. But most of all, if you've been through the treatment and you're suffering in any way from the outcomes of that treatment, there are things you can do. And they're the two reasons why we're here now talking about what we're talking about.
Okay, some quick fire advice. I'm living in rural WA. These are short answers. And I'm 45 or 50-ish, and I have no symptoms. What's your advice?
Well, if you've got a family history and you're 45, ask your GP for a PSA and insist. If you're 50 and you have no family history, then still have a PSA and don't avoid it and make sure you get one every year.
What about if I've got a family history of breast cancer?
There is some evidence that breast cancer is attached to the same gene as with prostate cancer. So, yeah, if your mother has breast cancer, go and have a PSA if you're over 45 or over 50. The Royal College of GPs ruling is over 50, but you can request one at 45. And that's what I would recommend and that's what the Urological Society recommends.
And what are the warning signs? What are the red flags? Tony, did you? What were yours?
None. Absolutely nothing. Just a bloody good GP, a good country GP, a conscientious one.
Are there some symptoms, though? Are there generally? Like, what about if I'm getting up in the middle of the night and going to the toilet three or four times?
Not usually. So those symptoms are usually an enlarged prostate. So the most common thing I hear from guys the first time I see them is I had no symptoms, and that is usual. So if you've got getting up in the middle of the night to wee or it's difficult and, you know, you have to shake it a few times to get it started, that usually means you've got an enlarged prostate. So you should definitely get it checked. But the scary thing about prostate cancer is that it's usually silent. You don't know.
Okay, I've just found out I have prostate cancer. What's your advice?
I think you should go and see a prostate cancer nurse. You should get on the PCFA website. If your GP refers you to a surgeon, you should go and get an advice from them, and you should also go and get it, like go and see someone who specialises in radiology and have a look at all your options, is what I think. And then you should definitely go and see a pelvic floor physio, because whatever your treatment is, the stronger your pelvic floor, the less likely you are to be incontinent or the quicker that you're going to heal. And you should go and see someone about your erectile function, particularly if it's not great to begin with, because you want to get your penis on a little bit of a gym program before you have your treatment.
The pelvic floor is an interesting one because people normally associate that expression with women and with childbirth, don't they? But I hear that a lot when we're talking about prostate cancer.
So most men don't even know they've got a pelvic floor until they get prostate cancer. But I think we should be teaching all young men in schools about their pelvic floor, because the stronger your pelvic floor, the more awesome your orgasm, no matter how old you are and whether you've had prostate cancer or not. And if we told every young boy that, they might actually do them. And then they would be able to be continent when they have treatment. So your pelvic floor, when you've had your prostate removed, is just the most important thing in helping you with your continence. And the sooner you start that exercise, the better.
Of those who have been diagnosed with prostate cancer, what percentage end up with problems after treatment?
So that's very controversial. There is so many research articles about this subject, and I can't tell you for continence. You'd need to ask one of my colleagues about that. But from an erection point of view, some research papers say 70% nowadays, like anyone who's had treatment in the last year, 70% will recover, 30% won't. And the 30% is different degrees of recovery. And other papers say as low as 40% recover. Yeah. So everyone's so individual. And it depends on three main things. How old you are when you get your treatment, how overweight you are, four things, what sort of treatment you have and what your erection function was like before you had the treatment. And so the only way you can really find that out is to go and see someone and they can weigh up those things for you. But I also think it's important that if you're one of those people who never gets their erections back naturally and spontaneously, there are amazing treatments that you can do so you can still get an erection again. You don't just have to put up with that. There's a lot of things you can do to make it work for short periods of time.
So, look, the message, you young blokes, don't think you're tough and you're going to get away with this. Get yourself checked and do it on a regular basis. Just please go and do that. And for you fellows that have been through the process, there are things you can do. And I hope you get some sort of benefit out of what Melissa's had to say, because it's not the end of the world. There are things you can do.
York Pharma and PGA President Tony Seabrook catching up with Richard Hudson, talking about his experience with prostate cancer. You also heard Melissa Hadley-Barrett, who's a nurse practitioner, sexologist and prostate cancer communicator. She's got her own website. It's rshealth.com.au. And she also has a podcast that you can pick up wherever you get your podcasts from. It's called The Penis Project. And if you need some more information, some advice, a really good place to go is the Prostate Cancer Foundation website. 27 past 12, and a few of your texts coming through. Just put your name and where you're texting from on that. 0448 922 604. This, a lack of services in country areas contributes to all cancers and diseases. Read up on it. We have a lack of doctors, labs, MRI machines, you name it. We do not have adequate services. Country medical services are sorely lacking. A Judith writes, my husband was told by a specialist prostate cancer is hereditary, a sobering thought for everyone, but particularly those young blokes whose grandfather and or father have had it. Something to think about, fellas. And are there some rural areas and towns that were sprayed for a locust plague in the past which have a high prevalence of cancer? 0448 922 604 to text through. 28 past 12. Well, another person who's dealt with the disease and is unafraid to talk about it is Don Boyle, a Broom Hill farmer and former champion shearer. It's been 15 years since Don was diagnosed with prostate cancer, and he says it was only by chance he found out he had it.
It really didn't faze me. One little bit, it affected the family a lot more than it affected me. I said straight out, it'll take more than that to knock me down. So, yeah, we went from there.
For a lot of people, though, cancer is obviously traumatic and an ordeal. I mean, is that how you kind of look back on it in some ways? I can't imagine that it could have been easy.
No, but I just took it as it was going to fix me, all the treatment I had. I didn't really doubt at any stage that I wasn't going to be better after.
So just tell me a little bit about how the diagnosis came about.
Yeah, well, it was only purely coincidental that they had a men's day in here and the doctor come down to the hall and brought a few nurses and they done blood tests and took your blood pressure and everything else. And he said, oh, look, everyone doesn't look too bad. But he said, if you get a phone call from me, he said, you know, you're in trouble. And you wouldn't believe it, I got a phone call.
So had you had any inkling that something wasn't right?
No symptoms whatsoever.
So when you got that phone call?
Yeah, that moment probably was the worst bit, I'd say. And I thought, oh, gee whiz, you know. Particularly when he said, you're not going to die tomorrow, but he said, I want you to go straight through to Perth.
What was the upshot of the treatment?
They said because I was young and fit, they would throw everything at me. That's the words he said.
Was that treatment, in the first instance, successful?
Yes, very. The trial lasted for, I think, 10 years. It's been 15 years now, but I still go and see the doctor. But he said after the 10-year period, he did tell me that was the most successful treatment out of all of the treatments that they had.
I mean, you mentioned before that in many ways it was hardest on your family, the diagnosis and what came afterwards. Why was that?
I think that they were very worried that they were going to lose me, simple as that. It wasn't in my mind that I was going to be passing away, but obviously it went through their mind quite often. So because some of the treatment that you do go through, the hormone therapy and that, changes your complex a bit, your attitude, and I probably wasn't the same for the first little bit, but then I got over that and got on with life again.
I mean, quite apart from the sickness that often invariably comes with chemo and radiation treatment, the hormone treatment obviously has its effects as well, to reduce testosterone levels. How did you find that?
Well, for a start, he said, I'll make you into a big fat wether. So, and he was right, because you do, you put on weight straight away. And as they take the testosterone out of your system, that's all your gauge is. So, I did put on quite a bit of weight at the time.
What was that like for someone who had been so fit and strong and lean?
I didn't really think much about it. The only thing I thought was they'd give you tablets, or the tablets they gave me was to stop hot flushes. It sounds stupid, but and they weren't very good. They were bad for you.
You never really sort of sensed your own mortality then? You never sort of thought, my time's up?
No, I don't think I ever once thought my time was up.
And so it's 15 years on now, and that's 15 years of extra life. Do you have any greater appreciation for life now that you've been through that?
Well, yeah, look, I seen guys before that didn't have an operation, or they wouldn't be treated because of the consequences. They'll put some pretty severe consequences in front of you, right? Now, that did deter a lot of people from having operations, and they're gone. Simple as that, they're gone. So I said, well, I'm going to have a bash at keeping alive for a start and worry about anything else later.
What sort of attitude is there among farmers these days about the risks of prostate cancer?
The treatments have gotten now, from what I can gather, are far better. They can target things far more accurate. My specialist told me it's like a collateral cable down there, all these little nerve endings and nerves where they go to, and all sorts of trouble can happen if something goes wrong. So that's what was frightening a lot of guys. They didn't want to lose their manhood, number one. Didn't want to be incontinent, number two. Probably scared them off a bit.
In that sense, though, as someone who's been through it and is still alive today, what's your advice?
Look, when you're up into an age bracket where you think that you should be tested, go and get tested. If it's in your family, most certainly get tested, probably from 40 onwards. I know my boys are getting tested. It is a silent killer, and you can see why, because I had no knowledge of anything that was wrong with me at the time. I was still good as, but in actual fact I wasn't. So you can see what they call it, a silent killer.
So do you feel like you owe your wife a debt you can never really repay then, in that sense?
Oh, most certainly, yeah. Don't have doubts like I did. Just go. Yeah, that's all I can say. Don't have doubts. Just go and be checked.
And how do you like still being alive?
Great. Every day you wake up's a good one.
Broomhill farmer and former champion shearer Don Boyle speaking to Daniel Mercer about his brush with prostate cancer.
This is The Country Hour with Belinda Varaschetti on ABC Local Radio WA.
It is great to have you along this afternoon. Well, prostate cancer has been a real feature discussion here on The Country Hour just over the last couple of days. And that is really because farmers and generally men in the country seem to have a higher rate of this cancer. The Prostate Cancer Foundation of Australia says a recent national study found that men living in rural and regional areas who were diagnosed with prostate cancer were 24% more likely to die within 5 years of being diagnosed compared to men in the city. And one of the main reasons for that statistic is because men in rural and regional areas of Australia get less prostate-specific antigen or PSA blood test done. But over the last couple of days, you also heard the controversial suggestion of a link between on-farm chemicals and prostate cancer. It is a suggestion or a theory that has never been proven. To recap, here's what Perth urologist Tom Shannon told you about the link.
Men in the country in particular seem to have a higher rate. Part of that could be explained by some chemical exposure, and I think we need to be concerned about that. There's certainly some preliminary data out of the US, and I'm sure everybody's seen that there's been a big settlement in California with Monsanto, with some linkages with breast cancer. It's not a big stretch to suggest that there could be a linkage with prostate cancer, but it's not proven.
Tom Shannon, who has over 20 years' experience as a high-volume prostate cancer surgeon and is also the pioneer behind WA's first dedicated prostate clinic, which aims to be a centre of excellence in prostate cancer treatment. This is the Country Hour. It's 20 to 1. You can join the conversation on text 0448 922 604, as Tom Powell has done. He says, I've been following the article on prostate cancer over the last few days, and I wonder why people are pointing at cropping chemicals as possible cause, but seemingly ignoring the animal husbandry chemicals, i.e. drenching, lysicides, blow-fly treatments. Also, a lot of country blokes after Colts football age get very little real exercise. Thank you for that, Tom. 0448 922 604 to have your say. Well, Emeritus Professor Stephen Powles is a plant scientist with a lifetime of experience working with farm chemicals. He's influenced Australian and international thinking on herbicide usage and fighting herbicide resistance. Professor, what are your thoughts on what urologist Tom Shannon had to say?
Oh, yes, Belinda. Well, the first thing is that I heard Tom Shannon clearly say that men need to have regular PSA blood tests, and that the amount of such testing is higher in men that live in cities than those that live in the country. And as someone who's spent the early part of my life in the country and then a long time in the city, I understand that very well. So first thing I would say is to all country men is get regular blood tests for PSA, because everybody knows that getting on to prostate early is the key to success.
Now, over the last couple of days, we have received a lot of feedback here on the Country Hour from farmers who are concerned that this sort of discussion could eventually result in the removal of chemicals like glyphosate from the shelves, and they seem almost threatened. What's your view on that?
Well, Belinda, I'm a crop scientist and I know a lot about the herbicides in particular that are used, but I'm not an epidemiologist or a urologist. But what I do know is that the personal protective equipment, PPE, that we hear so much about with COVID and the like, is the key to minimising exposure. So whether or not, and I don't think, and I think that what's been said, that there is no evidence that there is a linkage, but even if there was, Belinda, the key is good practice PPE equipment, minimising exposure. A truck outside a kindergarten is a big risk, and we have to minimise the way that that truck is used. And similarly, chemicals, treat them with respect and PPE and minimise contact with it. Now, the regulators in this country and in other places in the world, like the US EPA, they continue to look at these issues and continue to state that the registered herbicides are safe to the user, and while ever that's the case, then I'll continue to use them.
So if you're doing all the right things, you're reading the label, you're following the instructions, you are confident that the chemicals that are used on farms can be used without being detrimental to your health?
Yes, I believe that that's why we have the regulators, why they have experts such as epidemiologists. And so it's not for me as a crop scientist to question them, but to follow what they say. And if they said to me, or if they said tomorrow that a registered chemical was no longer registered, then I wouldn't use it.
Great. Thank you so much for just wrapping up that conversation and that feature that we've had over the last couple of days. I really appreciate that, Stephen.
You're welcome, Belinda.
That is Emeritus Professor Stephen Powles, who's a plant scientist. He's got a lifetime of experience just working with farm chemicals. If you want to read more, there is a feature that's gone up online for you to have a look at and share around with your community, which is, it's kind of the aim of this. It's really to share that information and really just tell yourself, tell your loved ones, the men in your life, to go out and have that PSA test. The great online article for you to have a read through. The link to it is up now on the ABC Rural Facebook page. And in the comments section underneath, you can offer your thoughts on why prostate cancer is a particular issue for rural men. And this through from Tom in Gero too. There needs to be a data analysis on the difference between city versus country to see what is really happening and then investigate the causes. Thank you for that, Tom. Appreciate it. This from Stephen. What about the country doctor's capabilities on prostate investigation and diagnosis? Asks Stephen. This from Robert in Mora. Prostate. If it's chemical related, what causes the city cases? I think the theory was, Robert, that there's just a higher number of people in rural and regional areas, men, that are just not getting tested and leaving it later and later in life. And that's when you've got problems. So the earlier you can get it, obviously, the better. While PSA test is important, it's also important to keep note of the results and watch for changes. Don't rely on your doctor. Changes are the danger signs. Clearly, that is something to look out for too. But all the experts are saying that PSA test is important, as well as a few other things, just keeping monitoring yourself and also the physical exam that is available too. And this too. Hi, Belinda. My gorgeous dad was recently diagnosed with prostate cancer. I am sad to hear that, but there is so much help available, as you've been hearing over the last couple of days. So keep that in mind. Plenty of help, and best to reach out and get some of it that's available. And also, straight after yesterday's program, this came through. Hey, Belinda, thank you for the show today. Thanks to your guests, Melissa Hadley-Barrett and Tony Seabrook, I had my prostate removed 6 years ago. All this time I thought I could deal with it, but today I realised that I'm not dealing with it that well. I push my wife away and distance myself. I've decided to stop seeding and return to Perth for the weekend to be with her. That made the feature all the worthwhile, I think.